This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen Pro. We stress our bodies all the time at the cellular level with overeating, lack of sleep, and lack of exercise. These stressors damage our cells, depleting a vital coenzyme for cellular health called NAD. True Niagen Pro is clinically proven to increase NAD, which supports your cellular resilience and energizes your cells to help maintain your cellular health. True Niagen Pro, cellular defense for life. For more information and to purchase, go to drhoffman.com/TrueNiagenPro. That's true, T-R-U, drhoffman.com/TrueNiagenPro. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. We appreciate your sending us questions. We have lots of them this week. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. With me is Layla Mutin. She's our nutritionist in residence. Each week, we respond to listener questions about all and sundry. Basically, the theme is intelligent medicine, the best of high-tech medicine, the best of natural therapies. We put those together for you each week and on our various and sundry podcasts and on our radio program. Layla, how you doing?
I'm okay. It's kind of hot, but not bad. It's summer after all. How are you?
It's hot and, I got up late this morning. I had some computer wrangles last night, so I stayed up late. It's kind of frustrating. And then I ended up sleeping late. And the problem is in the summer, if you sleep late, you miss that nice window of opportunity and the only time of the day when it's actually reasonably cool to run. By the time I got out to run, it was incredibly late for me. It was like 9:30. So as I ran down the street, I saw the temperature and it was already 80 degrees. And so this is my first hot summer run. You know, I recall runs that I did earlier in the spring where literally was sleeting, you know, when I would look at the thermometer, it was like, it's 38 degrees, you know, it's like, and I was thinking, oh, that could be a little sleet could be refreshing this morning. It was a good run, but it was a conditioning run. Let's put it that way. The challenge wasn't so
your
much
first
my
first conditioning run for
yes,
the season.
It was,
right,
it was heat conditioning. You know, so yeah, that was good.
Right.
And the other thing that I'm excited about is I actually got a call from my hair cutter, and she said, "Come on in," and first it was the health department that was precluding me from getting a haircut here in New York. And now I've got like an urgent note from the health department. You must report for your haircut. You're looking like a reprobate. You're scaring small children and dogs.
From the hair department.
The hair department, right. It's like the Bureau of Hair.
Department of Hair.
Bureau of Hair Control, you know.
Yes.
It's like, I got a notice. So anyways,
I don't want to look like a 1970s radical anymore.
Right. I'm almost looking like my college graduation picture. I'm just about approximating.
I can't find my ears.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's on my Students for Democratic Society card, is that picture, you know, so whatever. Now I'm a respectable person. All right. Before we get into questions.
We'll be going back into the office soon, so.
Yes. Yes, we will be going. And I assure you that I will be, you know, Dr. Armani, you know, once again, you know, clean look.
You will be recognized. Who's
right,
that?
Right, right.
Nope. No shaggy hair. Okay.
Exactly. Before we get into questions, I just wanted to share with you what I consider one of the duh stories of the week.
Oh, is this from Nutrition Coalition for immediate release?
Yes, yes.
Ah, yes, here it is.
Here it is. Okay, you got it. The headline is, limit on saturated fats is unnecessary, says, now, look, I mean, a lot of people have been saying that, but they're considered like the radical fringe of nutrition. You know, people like Dr. Atkins, you know, whom you worked for in the day.
Yep.
You know, one of your mentors. But who says it? The Journal of the American College of Cardiology. Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Leading scientists, including former members of USDA Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committees, published state-of-the-art review finding current government caps on saturated fats are no longer justified.
Woohoo!
American Heart Association, USDA, are you paying attention? Are you paying attention, folks? Because the prestigious Journal of the American College of Cardiology, I mean, they are concerned about heart problems, yeah.
Yes.
And their dogma has been, you know, artery clogging fat, right? You know,
yeah.
Cholesterol and fat.
That
it gets
nasty, saturated
gunk.
Fat.
Gunk. It just gunks up your arteries.
Yep.
You know, just like, you know, when you're trying to put bacon grease down the drain, you know, and you clog
Ooh,
your drain.
Oh, and then you get fat burgs. Yes.
Right. Yeah. So Roto-Rooter your arteries with lots of polyunsaturated fat. That's the nice fat.
That corn oil stuff.
Corn oil and so on.
Soybean oil.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So anyway, I'm going to just share a little quote from the abstract of the article, which is a summary of the article. The recommendation to limit dietary saturated fat intake has persisted despite mounting evidence to the contrary. Most recent meta-analyses of randomized trials and observational studies found no beneficial effects of reducing saturated fat, fatty acid intake on cardiovascular disease and total mortality. Yeah, because we're also concerned about total mortality, right? You just focus on heart disease.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the main cause of death. But, you know, we're also concerned about total mortality. And in fact, the more saturated fats that you consumed, the more you were protected against stroke. Oh, how about that? Although saturated fatty acids increase low-density lipoprotein cholesterol. See, that's been the argument. It's like they look at your numbers on a test and they say, oh, it must be bad for you because the LDL sometimes goes up.
Right.
Which actually, I mean, I'm a case in point. I was on a total vegan diet, very, very low-fat diet. My cholesterol was 135. My HDL was like 35. And then I flipped the script and I went to a diet where I have plenty of animal fat and butter. This I did about, you know, 20 years ago. My numbers changed dramatically. My cholesterol could be as high as 220, occasionally 230, but my HDL 75, 80.
There you go.
So yes, the LDL went up, but did it translate to risk? I recently had an EBT heart scan, zero plaque. Okay.
There you go. So it's not all about the LDL number one. Yes,
right.
The LDL may remain high or go up, but the particles of that LDL will change, especially in the setting of a lower carb diet. If you had small, dense, atherogenic pattern B particles, those particles now turn to the more desirable pattern A, big, fluffy particles, which will bounce around, but not get caught in the nooks and crannies, so to speak, of the arteries and cause obstruction.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
This is very important. Plus, your ratio changes. You had a very low HDL, 35. You went up to 75. That's terrific.
Yeah,
HDL being protected. That's a bigger garbage truck, to carry out so-called bad stuff.
Because the HDL particles are kind of a shuttle to take so-called bad cholesterol away from the artery wall. So they go on to say, whole fat dairy, unprocessed meat. By the way, they say unprocessed meat, which is really kind of our sticking point here, is that people eat a lot of processed meat. That probably is not good.
A lot of sodium.
Right. And,
nitrite.
And these artificial ingredients, which damage the microbiome and so on, so on, so on. So they say whole fat dairy, unprocessed meat, eggs, and dark chocolate are saturated fatty acid rich foods with a complex matrix that are not associated with increased risk of cardiovascular disease. Oh, boy. So these are all the things I eat. Well, actually, I don't even have a lot of whole fat dairy. I mean, occasionally I'll have a little piece of, you know, like I just, they have
I'll
an outdoor
have a
market here.
Parmesan.
Yeah, I just picked up a little bit of natural organic cheddar, and it, you know, it's just and a little complement to my diet. But, you know, that'll last me for, you know, 3 weeks.
Right. It's more like a condiment or something. Mm-hmm,
exactly.
Yeah.
And dark chocolate's on that list. Eggs are on that list.
Yeah.
The total available evidence does not support further limiting the intake of such foods. The paper also notes these historical facts demonstrate that saturated fats were an abundant key part of the ancient human diet. Oh, boy, we've been arguing.
Oh, you mean like the paleo diet?
Right. Yeah. I think they're finally catching up. They're finally catching up. Finally. How long did it take? When did Atkins die? I don't know.
Oh, 2003.
Okay, so almost 20 years. And you know, they're generally the American College of Cardiology. I mean, this would just warm the cockles of his heart because he was a cardiologist, and he was just crucified for these iconoclastic views that are now being embraced by mainstream cardiology. Wow. Very exciting.
There we go.
Okay.
I still think it's going to take a little more time for things to change, Dr. Hoffman, as you know. But, yeah, it's good that this is out there so that practitioners can be reminded.
You know, there's a lot of statues being torn down, and, you know, and that's very controversial.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to enter into that debate. But this is a statue that needs to be torn down. This monument to, you know, avoiding saturated fats and cholesterol. That is definitely, I want, if there's such a monument, I want to get out there, you know, and, you know, with a rope and pull it down and stomp on it in effigy.
Yeah, well, let's see if American Heart Association starts to change its tune now instead of touting all these vegetable oils as heart healthy.
No, there's going to be pushback and, you know, finally. Well,
there will be. There will be.
The controversy
will be. We'll be here.
Right. But, you know, this I will say.
Yeah.
If you eat a lot of fat in the context of a diet that is an abysmal diet, that's a very caloric diet. That's going to make you sick and, you know, develop some sort of accelerated pathway to death. So, you know, this does not exonerate tons of fat on top, you know, on top of your very poor standard American diet. So
you don't want the donut sandwich diet.
Right. Which is rich in whatever.
You shouldn't have an eclair at breakfast.
It's funny.
Or Danish.
We have a guy in our family, and he eats very abstemiously around us because our whole family is very nutrition conscious. But when he goes back to Belgium, he admits to he will go and have a chocolate eclair for breakfast. It's just part of his DNA. He's got to have it, you know. Then he gets back on the wagon.
What happened to the Belgian waffle? Wait a minute.
Oh, the Belgian waffles, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, great. Let's get to questions, okay? Because we could go on this subject.
Yeah. Let's see here. We have an email. Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I'm a competitive age grouper runner here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going in soon to have the doctor take out a piece of torn meniscus.
Yeah.
Any supplements that could help the recovery?
Yeah. All right. This is the first public revelation of this by yours truly, is that I, too, am an age group runner, triathlete. I try to compete, but all the triathlons have been canceled this year. So I've got to train.
You know, I was going to ask you about that. It's
canceled. They're all canceled. There's one I really like. It's very close. It's very easy for me to get to. I mean, some of the triathlons you have to get up at like 3 a.m. and drive for like, you know, 2 hours to get to. That's no fun. Cause they're always start at the crack of dawn, in the summer. But my favorite one just, you know, like 15 miles away, 20 miles away, it was canceled. But anyway, so, you know, I'm training on my own, and I'm really, you know, I'm having a good time. I'm biking and swimming again, you know, because it's finally, the water's warm enough. I don't need a wetsuit anymore. And I'm running. And, in fact, I ran this morning. Last year, Memorial Day, I took a run, and I'd had some problems with my knee. And I decided, oh, what the hell? You know, let me just, because when you age and when you have injuries and aches and pains, you have two options. One is to say, you know, it hurts a little, I'll run through it. And the other is to be very prudent and say, you know, you got to back off. And that morning I said, you know, what the hey, let me just run through it. And I took a very short run, like a 2-mile run. And
That's still a good run.
I came up very sore. Ah. And then I said, well, okay, I'm going to ice it, blah, 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 and it'll get better in a week. I'll have to, stay off that knee. Well, it didn't get better. And it persisted all through the whole summer. And I wasn't running. I was able to start cycling. I was swimming. So I maintained my aerobic exercise and I went to the weight room and it didn't put a lot of pressure on my knee. I didn't do heavy squats, but there was something wrong with my knee and I felt it. It kind of clicked. I felt like a little click, as I walked around. And, so then I looked it up as a doctor. You look stuff up and instead of going to the doctor, I looked it up. I said, I'm a doctor. I can figure this out myself. So I looked it up and it said in people over 60, knee problems can arise and you might have, this or you might have that, or you might have a torn meniscus, but the prognosis for fixing a torn meniscus in an over 60-year-old, but probably some degree of knee arthritis, very poor likelihood. So I delayed. I said, okay, let me rehab this. Let me strengthen it. Let me do various rehab exercises, blah, 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 blah. Persisted all summer. I couldn't run. I would have a little trouble walking too. I remember going to a lot of Yankee games last year when there were sports. Remember when there were sports? I actually went to Yankee.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of stair climbing at Yankee Stadium and it was a little tough. I'd take an Advil, I don't like to take it. I would say my knee hurts. All summer long. Finally, at the end of the summer, I said, damn it, this isn't getting better. This is just not,
And you waited an appropriate amount of time, Dr. Hoffman, to see if it would get better. Yeah.
And I talked myself into it by reading articles that said, I got an MRI. And the MRI indeed confirmed that I had a complex tear of the medial meniscus. So I said, then I read up on that and they said, when you have a complex tear of your medial meniscus, surgery's not going to work in the older age group. So I suffered and I suffered and I suffered and I said, well, is this the new normal? So finally, I just got disgusted. I said, I want to see the top guy at Hospital for Special Surgery deals with knees. And I found the guy. I said, well, it's probably take 2 months for me to get an appointment. Let me call up anyway. I said, when can I get an appointment? And they said, are you free tomorrow? And I said, oh, yeah.
Terrific.
Come on in. So I come on in. And then it was also very discouraging in this guy's office because I walk in and I see even a lot of young people. And they have these big casts from ankle to hip. On their legs. And I'm thinking, I don't want that. That's horrible. Right. I went and I brought the MRI to the guy because I could order an MRI for myself. I didn't have to go to a doctor for that. I showed him the MRI and he looks at it. He doesn't even barely look at me. He just looks to the MRI. He looks at the knee for 2 seconds and he looks at the MRI and he says, you see this? And I'd never seen this. He said, and he shows me this little tiny fragment that's protruding up. And you could see it very clearly. He knew how to read an MRI. I didn't really know how to read an MRI. I had to look at the interpretation. And he said, you have a lot of cartilage left. You don't have much arthritis. You just have a single tear. And he says, I can fix this and you'll be running again. I said, when can we schedule surgery? So within 2 weeks, I went, it was last October, I had meniscus surgery. And what happened was, initially, I was kind of disappointed because he kind of raised my expectations. He says, oh, you'll be running in like a few weeks. I said, I really wasn't running for weeks and weeks and weeks afterwards. And I just thought, well, the surgery somewhat repaired this, but I still, I got kind of an old knee and, there's still some problems there. I was very sparing of my knee until the lockdown in March. And with the lockdown, I just got desperate. It was I couldn't go to the gym. I couldn't swim. I couldn't cycle because I was in the city. So I said, I got to do something. And I think maybe I'm ready. I mean, the knee feels a little unsteady. And I started running. And it was okay. And I ran. And the knee was a little stiff. And
that's from lack of use almost.
It is. And the rest of me, I found, had deconditioned to running, even though I was doing other stuff. What ended up happening is I'm doing about, maybe 30, 35 miles of running per months, which is, you know, running about, you know, 2.5 miles every other day or so. Sometimes I take a little time off, you know, like this weekend I had other things to do, you know, exercise-wise, I had cycling and I had swimming. But the knee, frankly, is the least of my problems. I mean, I got other stuff. It's like, oh, you know, when you're 67 and you're running, it's always going to be something. It's like, whatever, you know, my heel hurts, my this, my that, you know. I can manage that because those are not tears. So yeah. What this guy says, he said he got meniscus surgery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Took out a piece of torn meniscus.
And that could be great. I mean, it depends because by the way, my surgeon, when he went in there, he said, I looked in there, he says, you have a lot of cartilage left. You have a remarkable lack of arthritis for a 67-year-old. So we took the piece out. You have plenty of cartilage left. Well, that's the other problem, is when you have meniscus surgery for arthritis, you just take away the padding, and then you accelerate bone on bone. That's the problem. So I said, is there any danger there? He says, we don't do that anymore. He says, they used to completely strip the meniscus, and, you know, that was a mistake. And now they're very sparing. You know, they go in with a little tiny scissors, and they cut out the piece. Anyway, I'm very happy with the outcome. Is my knee even... My knee is not even 100%, but my goodness, I'm able to run. I'm able to walk. I forget about it. That's great.
Terrific.
So what... Can you
Dr.
use
Dr. Hoffman, to, yeah. after the break, maybe you'll tell us what kind of supplements you took to help
great,
with the healing.
Great point. Let's take a break and allow one of our sponsors to share an important message with you. Here it goes. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Biomega Fish Oil from Biotics Research. For over 40 years, Biotics Research has been providing the highest quality supplements, surpassing industry standards. Biomega Fish Oil contains therapeutic doses of vital omega-3s in the triglyceride form, which is highly bioavailable. Biotics Research ensures maximum purity and freshness by managing their fish oils from catch to capsule, verified by rigorous independent testing. For more information, go to drhoffman.com/biotics research. That's drhoffman.com/biotics research for Biomega fish oil. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. So let me tell you what I've been taking. I didn't really so much alter my program, except I took a lot of Wobenzyme right after the surgery, which helps...
to help reduce any scar tissue,
proteolytic enzymes,
all of that, yeah.
But I continue to take the things I take. I take MSM, I take glucosamine with chondroitin, a product called Avasoy. I take a lot of fish oil. I take curcumin, a lot of curcumin. I think those are the main things that are germane. Of course, I take a lot of other nutrients. MSM. Did I say MSM?
Yes, yeah. MSM, okay. You said.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right.
Very good.
And, you know, so there you have it. You know, that I think is a good regimen for post, you know, surgery or for any kind of inflammatory condition. You know, I hesitated to share this story because, you know, it's kind of like I didn't know the outcome. And I expected to be able to say I had the surgery in October and November. Let me tell you how great it was, you know, because, like, I want to be Superman. But it really wasn't such a smooth course of recovery. It was a very gradual recovery. But I should have been more patient, you know. And and actually, the... hidden benefit of the coronavirus stay-at-home order was that I had to run because I needed an outlet, and it emboldened me to try to run because there was nothing else but to do, you know, floor exercises and crunches and, you know, how that's too boring, you know. I had to get outside and do something, so... The running, I regained the running, which I'm delighted about.
That's wonderful. That is wonderful.
So did I answer his question, or did I just use it as
wanted to know about the supplements, right?
Okay, great. Okay.
Very good.
Okay, Layla, let's do pause for...
It's that time.
It's
wow.
that time. So it part one, and in part two, so we'll... We divide our podcast into two parts. In part two, give us a preview of what we're going to talk about.
Oh, I have chronic bronchitis, and I've been treating myself with vitamin C and zinc and chiolic, but I still have it. Help.
Mm-hmm. Right. I just want to say, just if we could put a moral on the story of the knee. The moral of the story is, he who hath himself for a doctor hath a fool for a doctor. Because I had convinced myself of the futility of surgery just by reading up on it. And then when I went to the surgeon, who was expert, he disabused me. He said, well, yes, generally that's true. You know, that, you know, 67-year-olds don't do well with surgery, but, you know, we have to individualize this. And in your case, you're unusually free of arthritis, and you're athletically pretty fit, and you have plenty of cartilage left. So let's try the surgery as if you were a younger athlete, you know, like, say,
there you go.
I mean, these surgeries originally were pioneered in athletes that are much younger, you know, athletes in their 20s and 30s. And,
well, you know, you have a younger biological age. Is that what that's called?
Yeah.
You know, where you take that test.
I would like to think so.
There's certain health determinants, and you're actually, what, 38 instead of 67?
But here's the difference. If I were, you know, a 32-year-old baseball player, you know, and this happens for a football player, and this happens very frequently, and you see that, you actually see those injuries, and it's heartrending. You see the injuries on the field, and you go, oh, my God, that leg is at a crazy angle. That person has torn meniscus or torn, you know, Achilles or something, or torn.
Yeah.
Knee tendons, and they're out for the season. They are out for the season. They're going to get surgery immediately, but that it's a season ending injury, but they come back within a year, and then they can be awesome. And then they can be awesome. And it took me quite a few months, to get the kind of recovery that a younger athlete might get sooner. But,
there
it is. Okay, so that's the lesson of the moral of the story. Let's return in part two to answer additional questions. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. We'll be right back. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla.